This is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So we're still in the grip of winter, despite it being April.
There's a bit of sunshine out there.
There's no leaves on any of the trees. This is ridiculous.
That's true, yeah. We're recording from Studio A. I can't remember which one we nominated.
I think I'm Studio One, so this is Studio A.
Studio A, yes. Lewis, stinking of booze, as he said, half a beer, so he's off his rocker.
That's
who
it.
Knows what he's going to say.
Anything could come out of my mouth in the next half hour.
Probably I'll have to edit out all the really racist and sexist stuff he's going to say as we do the podcast.
I'll save that for later. But yeah, so how have you been? Have you seen any films?
I have seen some films.
What?
I know, I went to the cinema.
When was the last time you've been to the cinema before this week?
Before this week, I saw that terrible film, A Place Beyond the Pines, and I saw that about 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago. So yeah,
more than me then.
Yeah, I saw Ken Loach's Spirit of 45. Yeah, that's right. Ken Loach, and it's a documentary, and I went to the cinema to see it. So stick that in your pipe.
A documentary in the cinema?
About post-war Labour government. I mean, there was no CGI.
Right.
There was no dinosaurs.
No CGI, no James Callaghan or anything like that. It sounds like the dullest documentary I've ever heard
of. No, it was very good. It was very good.
Yeah?
Yeah. So this week, we are covering 1990 classic.
Yeah.
Goodfellas.
It's good.
A good shit, and it's about some fellas. It, yeah. Well, I mean, this is a proper classic. This is a proper big film.
This is a big one.
This isn't
any of your Ingmar Bergman slightly obscure films. This is a proper one that people have heard of.
Yeah, this is the sort of film that when you say you haven't seen it, they are genuinely shocked.
Exactly, because it's always on ITV, although most of the blood edited out.
Yeah. I mean, and I was the one who hadn't seen this.
I can't believe you.
Exactly, here we go.
Can't believe you haven't seen this film.
And so I'd not got around to see it, and luckily it was recommended by a listener called Andrew.
Yeah, Andrew. I seem to have forgotten to write down his surname. So Andrew, thanks, whoever you are.
Whoever you may be, Andrew. It's for all the Andrews out there who listen to us. All the Andrews are like Goodfellas. Let's just say it's you that recommended the podcast, the film today.
Also, Craig Huffman got in touch with a few recommendations for us. He said any Scorsese. Here we are, Craig.
Yeah, yeah.
Here we are, Scorsese.
You can tell your wife that we did read your email, and now you're getting a mention on the podcast.
Exactly. We're probably going to do The Warriors as well, so thanks for that recommendation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but getting back to Goodfellas, when did you first see this?
I saw it when I was at university, I think.
Now, that's quite common, because I remember, I don't know how I didn't see it then, because I remember, I think our friend Amy had a Goodfellas poster on a wall. It was a common one you saw in lots of student houses. People had a Goodfellas poster.
Yeah, I remember watching loads of Scorsese films at uni, and all the kind of gangster films, Scarface, The Godfather, all those
things. I remember I watched Scarface with you. I distinctly remember watching that with you. Yeah. But Goodfellas, again, passed me by.
Can't believe this one escaped. This is the best one.
This is, I mean, and perhaps we'll mention this again. I think we mentioned this in our Godfather podcast. Just gangster films just don't really interest me.
Don't float your boat.
No, and I think that's perhaps why that it managed to slip by me.
You're a gentle man.
Gentle soul in many ways. A man who's on the side of law and order, doesn't wish to glamorise the ne'er-do-wells who are making money from illegal means.
Exactly. Keeps rabbits.
This was my first time watching Goodfellas.
I'm glad I was there for your first time.
Yeah, well, there you go. And yeah, I liked it.
I liked it as well.
Good.
It was good.
Let's not go into detail, though. We're not going to do the pitch and plot. So, what's the pitch, Lewis?
The pitch, this is the prequel to The Sopranos.
Yeah, that's true.
And even, I mean, a lot of the Sopranos actors were in this before.
Yeah, loads. Yeah, there was lots of crossover, wasn't there?
Paul Savino, obviously.
And now, again, this is, again, another thing I've not watched. I guess because, again, I'm not particularly interested in gangsters. But I'm under the impression that The Sopranos is kind of about following gangsters who are directly influenced by gangster films.
Yeah.
So the gangsters in Sopranos act like the gangsters in Goodfellas, but because they've actually seen Goodfellas. Is that right?
Yes, I think to some degree, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But also the kind of the filming of the Sopranos was inspired a bit by the Goodfellas film in the sense that it showed them gangsters at home almost, you know, gangsters interacting with their mums and...
Yeah, their day-to-day life, exactly. Yeah, rather than just the big exciting crime bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The film itself is based on a true story.
Yeah, surprising that, isn't it? Some of the stuff that happens in it, you think, nah, that couldn't have happened in real life, but yeah, actually, no, it did.
So the film follows Henry Hill, played by Ray Liotta in the film. But Henry Hill was a real person, a real gangster.
He's a real dude.
Yeah, entered the trade in the 50s and then entered a witness protection program in the early 80s.
Do you know, apparently you know, he got thrown out of the witness protection program.
Yeah, because he was showing off about a film being made about him.
Yeah, because he turned up at the premiere of Goodfellas going, hey, yeah, this film's about me.
So the film charts his rise and fall in a little mob outfit in Brooklyn. I make it sound quite sweet, don't I?
Yeah, with a little mob.
It's the family business. the family business.
Yeah, it's kind of over, what, 35 years or something?
Yes, yeah. So it starts off him as a little boy, and then just Harry gets ingratiates and works his way up. Learns the trade. Now, I was unsure what to expect with this. The last gangster film I watched, I guess, was The Godfather. We did it as part of the podcast.
Yeah.
And I was expecting something a lot like this. Mm. And it's very different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The Godfather is like, I don't know, an opera.
I was going to say that same word. It is like an opera.
Yeah. It feels high art. It feels... It's The Godfather, in a way... It's about gangsters, but it's not about gangsters. Mm. It feels like an old story, a tale that could have been told from Shakespearean times.
Yeah.
Whereas Goodfellas is about gangsters. Mm. Gangsters are at the heart, and gangster culture is at the heart. And when we say gangsters, we mean Italian-American gangsters.
Yeah. The regular street crims.
Yes, and they are at the heart of Goodfellas, whereas Godfather, you could almost use any kind of dressing to tell that story.
Yeah. I mean, it feels very personal, the film, because Martin Scorsese grew up in the areas kind of depicted here, and these are the kind of guys he used to see on the streets, you know, and it feels very much a kind of personal film for that reason, like Mean Streets did before it. When Nicholas Pileggi, the guy who wrote the book, Scorsese read it and he called up the author and said, you know, this is the book I've been waiting for all my life. And the author replied, you know, this is the phone call I've been waiting for all my life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of, it seems a perfect fit for kind of Scorsese's sensibilities, you know.
Yeah, and well, he didn't really want to do it though, did he? Well, initially, before he read the book, he was very wary of doing another gangster film.
Yeah, I think he was worried about being typecast, you know, because he's done Mean Streets and Taxi Driver was also very kind of New York centric, lots of kind of violence. And I think he wanted to do The Last Temptation of Christ.
Of course, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think he ended up doing that first, and then he ended up doing Goodfellas. Interesting one to follow up the story of Christ.
No, wasn't it the other way around?
Was it? No. Was it? No,
because he couldn't get the money for The Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, I can't
so
remember
he
now.
Went then went into...
Either way, they're bedfellows in his canon. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it was a really good film.
Yeah.
Fantastic film. I absolutely love this film. I've seen it a few times, and just watching it again recently, I've forgotten how good it was.
Certainly you have been pushing this one for a while.
I've been pushing you into this.
Yeah, you can.
Every
time we were thinking, what should we do next? You kept saying, oh, we should do, really should do Goodfellas.
But then you're like, oh, it's 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, it's about gangsters.
It's a quick 2.5 hours.
It is a quick 2.5 hours.
It really flies by.
Yeah, that's very, very true.
It's funny how once was only an hour and 20 minutes, and yet that dragged anything.
Still coping with the reverberations of once.
Oh, once, it still stings. It still stings.
All right, trivia quiz?
Trivia quiz, yeah.
Hi there, podcasts. Welcome to the groovy section of the podcast. That's right, it's the trivia quiz. Nice.
Trivia quiz.
Question one. Okay, one of the more charismatic performances in the film is by Robert De Niro, and he plays James Conway. All-round nasty piece of work, basically. Now, this role was turned down by Al Pacino.
Oh, okay.
Due to fears of being typecast as a gangster.
Right.
But he actually ended up playing a gangster in another 1990s film, a 1990s family film, and he played the gangster Big Boy Caprice.
What was that film? It's Dick Tracy. I saw this in the cinema, Dick Tracy.
I saw this in the cinema as well.
I think it's I had the sticker book.
Terrible. I remember it being awful.
To be honest, I was too swayed by the moving pictures and bright colours.
It would be interesting to see now, but I remember being just bored as a kid. So this is where my distaste for gangster films comes from.
I think I quite enjoyed it, mostly because of the funny faces. And it was surprisingly violent for a kid's film as well.
I can't remember. I do remember, I definitely saw it in the cinema. But anyway. Question two. Joe Pesci won a Oscar for his performance as Tommy DeVito. What was unusual about his acceptance speech?
Oh, it was really short, wasn't it? Like, one of the shortest.
That's right, yeah. It's actually the third shortest ever. All it is, this is an honour and a privilege, thank you. Do you know the other two short ones?
No.
It was actually, the second shortest is William Holden.
Holden.
Yeah, 101 of Films Illumini.
Yeah, Network.
Network and Sunset Boulevard. Yeah, his acceptance speech was thanks a lot, or thanks very much. And then Alfred Hitchcock, his acceptance speech was just thanks. That was the shortest ever.
Nice. Do you think someone's going to go up and just say
is there a word that is shorter that still means thanks than thanks?
Fans?
Just a thumb up.
Tar?
Yeah, tar. There we go. Question three. The first scene recorded of the film was not actually directed by Scorsese. Who did it instead?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, now, you don't have to give me the name, just the description of the person, if you know what the person was.
I think I've read this. I think it was they filmed the advert for Murray's Wig Shop first, and it was directed by like a local storeman or something. I don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah, I'll give you that because it's more or less on the right track. It's directed by a man called Stephen Packer. The actual advert was inspired by a kind of local, low budget, crappy advert Scorsese had seen, and he got the guy who did that to record it just so it was perfect.
Nice. I did that, but it's great.
Yeah.
Nice one. Did I get 3 out of 3?
Yeah, you did get 3 out of 3. Well done.
Yes!
Congrats.
Okay, you'll go. Question number one. When Karen asks Henry what he does, what does he reply?
Does he just say business?
No, he doesn't.
Oh, isn't it? Isn't it waste management or something?
No, you're wrong. He says, I'm in construction.
Construction.
I'm a union delegate.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Seems unlikely. Question number two. What song is playing during the montage sequence when the bodies are found in the car, dumpster and meat truck?
Oh, I can't remember.
It's Layla.
Oh, I was going to say Layla. I didn't think it was. I thought that was in a different scene.
No, it's that bit.
Fuck. Okay,
and last question. So, you know the bar scene where you're introduced to all the gangsters?
Yeah.
Name two of the gangsters.
Oh, no idea.
No idea? Well, you can't remember any of their funny names.
No. Yeah, I could make one up. Timmy Big Face ears. See,
this is my favourite scene. I love all the gangster names coming up.
Long Legs. Long Legs. That sort of stuff just goes completely over my head.
I love that.
I did terribly there.
I'll read out the names. I've got to read out the names.
Okay, go on then.
Okay, so in that scene was Anthony Stabile, Frankie Carboni, Fat Andy, Frankie the Wop, which is my personal favourite.
Yeah.
Freddie No Nose, Pete the Killer, Nicky Eyes.
God, there's no way I would have remembered any of those.
Mickey Francesi, Jimmy Two Times.
At least it shows that it's that kind of stupid nonsense wasn't just invented by what's his face, Guy Ritchie.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy Two Times is my favourite.
I know those are kind of like real criminals have those nicknames, but.
What would your criminal nickname be?
Oh, no nonsense.
No nonsense, Ian.
That kind of stuff, it just doesn't...
I think you'd be...
It's weird, isn't it? Because people find that so cool. And I just think that's stupid. Not that I wish to upset any of our gangster listeners, but...
All right, Duke.
I just think, yeah, it's just stupid. It's daft. I know, it really...
I think you'd be Pope the Rope.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. You'd probably kill people with a rope or
maybe it would be something... Isn't it normally kind of slightly ironic? It tends to be about the absence of something. Ian just like Little John in Robin Hood wasn't little, yeah. Except in Maid Marian.
Ian Littleface.
Yeah, my face isn't that big though, so... Is it? So
eyebrows. Jimmy
that
eyebrows.
Would be Jimmy Little Eyebrows or something. So, I don't know. What an interesting picture you paint for me to the audience. I did terribly there, didn't I?
Yeah. What happened?
3-0. I don't know. Great. So let's move on. it sounds like I didn't enjoy the film, didn't my tone. It's just, you know, I did enjoy the film. I just don't care about
it. You can't muster enthusiasm for this amazing gangster.
No, I really like the film. I really like the film. I just don't like gangsters.
I don't like you.
I find it... let's get this out. Let's just talk about this right now. Okay. I think we did talk about it when we did Godfather, but I want to talk about it again now. I find people's obsession with gangster films and culture just... slightly juvenile.
Ooh, I'm raising my handbag to my chest here.
I think it's the sort of thing that I can't ever escape the idea that you're like, yeah, these are just criminals, aren't they? It's like when growing up where I grew up, you know, sort of on the outskirts of East London. Yeah, there were kids
running in gangs. I can imagine.
No, but there were kids in my school
running
who
in your
used
little
to,
gang.
There is like an overhang from like the 60s of like an obsession with East End gangsters.
Yeah,
and. I just never got it because to me, they were like, "Oh yeah, all these funny names." Huh? I'm like, "Yeah, they used to like kill people though, and just extort money from small business people who were terrified about their lives and their property and their family."
So you're saying because you've been at the thin
end
of the ledge.
No, I haven't. I just
suffered under the craze.
I just can't. Oh yeah, they got sharp suits, but yeah, they just hurt loads of people. I just don't get it. I can't. And it's not even like an out-and-out cartoon villainy that, yeah, you know, like perhaps, for example, you know, I could enjoy, I like the Joker as a character, but that's because that's nuts.
Yeah, you never killed anyone in real life.
Yeah, exactly. If the Batman comics are actually based on real life.
Suddenly, they wouldn't be as funny.
I wouldn't find the Joker that amusing or entertaining. I think that's what it is. Like, when it's kind of... real stories and all that kind of
stuff.
Well,
it's like the Kray twins, isn't it? Like, people idolise the Kray twins and they're kind of like seen as people, I don't know, they've got this weird sort of respect and you're like, they're just awful, horrible people who kill
criminals,
people.
Yeah. They never hurt their own. Well, that's not true because if they... they only hurt their own. Well, that's not true. Otherwise, they couldn't be gangsters.
Exactly.
Criminal activity requires you to harm innocent people at some point in that level.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. I'm too much of a goody two-shoes.
There we go.
Perhaps that's what it is.
I think the Goodfellas deserve... The Goodfellas.
The Goodfellas.
I think the Goodfellas.
The Goodfellas.
The Goodfellas.
The Goodfellas
good,
film.
The Goodfellas film does a good job of explaining... the attraction of the lure of gangsterdom, you know, it shows all the kind of the you know, the easy access to money, the respect, you know, the feeling of belonging, and
there is definitely that. I understand that. Yeah, that so that was interesting.
But it also shows the, you know, the negative side, the fact that you're more than likely to get killed quite easily. Yeah. You know,
no, that I mean, that, and that's what I mean. I don't think this film particularly glorifies it. I mean, yes, it shows characters, you know, in the sharp suits and, you know, like the kind of the glamour of it. But it has to show the glamour, to, as you say, to make it understood why you'd commit these horrific acts and get involved in just terrible, terrible violence and take part in this. It has to show the good stuff to explain the bad stuff.
Yeah.
But eventually it shows them being corrupted by that lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly.
The one thing I would say is that, to me, the perhaps a weakness, well, not the weakness of the film, it's just the truth of it. It kind of suggests that if he'd only just played by the rules of being a gangster, he would have been all right.
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's it.
He doesn't actually just punish him just because he's being a criminal. It punishes him because he doesn't follow the code.
That's it. If you followed the code, if you didn't get in the drug business,
none of them would have been. They'd have all been okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. That's
except true. You know all the people they kill and maim and hurt.
That's true. That's true. You've got to be a good gangster and not a bad gangster.
Let's get away from the kind of the moral ambiguities of the film and actually the film itself. I think from now on, let's just say this right now, Lewis. This is a good film, followed by full of fantastic performances.
Yeah, we don't want to get bogged down in talking about all this.
I'm not going to spend all my time just saying how brilliant Robert De Niro is.
Do you know what? Robert De Niro is a great actor.
Did you know that? Yeah, just keep saying this over and over again. Yeah, fantastic performance. That was a great performance. Oh, an excellent performance. They're all good.
Is it me, or did Ray Liotta get fatter during the course of this film? He seemed to put on a lot of pounds over the course of the film, and I don't know whether it was just me.
Yeah, but I presume that was on purpose, though.
But on the face, makeup? Or did he just put on
he looks a bit puffy.
Yeah. Is that makeup?
I don't know, possibly.
His wrists look bigger as well.
I just presume, maybe, I don't know. I never really thought. Maybe it's the way it was filmed, the lighting.
Genuinely looked bigger by the end.
And maybe he just did put weight on as the film went forward.
I want to know the answer to this. Did he get fat, or was he made to look fat?
Or was he told to get fat?
Because he's quite podgy nowadays, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not a stout gentleman.
He's filled out.
He enjoys his dinner. Yeah.
I thought Joe Pesci was quite unconvincing as a 20-year-old, though.
Yeah, okay, right. Maybe we should mention just that. But the sheer strength of his performance. In a funny way, though, I bet Joe Pesci has looked the exact same since he was 20. That kind of, he's got one of those faces.
I don't know, he's got quite a thick neck in this. So I'm sure he didn't have when he was 20.
There are people who just look old. Once they get to like 19, they look old and don't really look any different until they're about 60. So it wouldn't surprise me if Joe Pesci didn't look massively different when, 20 years before. Yeah. I don't know, it didn't massively distract from the film from me.
Mm. Anyway, speaking of Joe Pesci, great scene, the most memorable scene in this film, do you think I'm funny? I amuse you? I look like a clown?
It is really good, but for me, obviously, has been ruined by the constant its appearance in just pop culture.
It's been
I knew exactly what was going to happen. Yeah. So yeah, it still is powerful, and I could see why it's so powerful and why it's had that impact. But it's the actual impact has been sadly diluted just because I've seen it a million times in other things.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing about that film, I didn't realise until I was reading about the film just yesterday, that it was improvised. Like, a lot of the dialogue was just...
It's got an interesting gestation, this period. One, it's based on a true story. Then Scorsese and Nicholas Beleggi, the author of The Wise Guys, the book the film is based on, they kind of wrote it together, didn't they? They kind of sat down and put... they had 11 or 12 different drafts.
Yeah.
And then they got actors on board, De Niro, everyone else, and then they got them to improvise with each other, and then from those improvisations, then wrote down the scenes they felt worked really well and put them in the script.
Yeah.
So I think two like quite good scenes, like the "Do I Amuse You" scene. I'm not going to try and do the voice. But apparently, a gangster did that to Joe Pesci when he was young.
Yeah, he based it on his own life. Yeah.
And then Joe Pesci's mother in the film.
Oh yeah, now Tommy's I love mother. This bit. Yeah. So Tommy's mother in the film is actually played by Martin Scorsese's mother, Catherine Scorsese. She's brilliant. I love her in this film. She's so good. I mean, there's this great bit where they've kind of killed this guy and they stop off at her house to kind of pick up a shovel to bury the body in the middle of the night. And she walks in, she's like, "Tommy, hey, how are you doing? You haven't seen me for ages. Come round, have some dinner." Mm. And then the next scene is them all just sitting down to eat this huge plate of food in the middle of the night.
Henry, Ray's character, just really not, you can't, what they've just done, you can't really get it.
Can't really process it, yeah. And they're just eating away, and there's this great, all this great improvised dialogue, the whole scene was improvised, you know, and he's like, yeah, we got the, we need, and can I borrow this knife, Mom, you know, I need to cut off the deer's hoof.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Or the deer's paw, that. Isn't it?
It's like, and what's that, she paints pictures of dogs, is that
yeah. Right? Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, that painting is amazing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's great, because like, there's a dog going one way, and then another dog going the other way.
Yeah, yeah. So, brilliant. All that stuff works really, really well, and I think that has that makes certainly the film very sparky.
Yeah, and it's, you can see that was the inspiration for The Sopranos, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Home with the gangsters.
Definitely, yeah, the kind of soap opera side of it.
Yeah,
I like the glimpse into the gangster wives as well.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
it, where
yeah.
Just all the kind of bitching about each other and all that.
The bad skin, yeah, the peroxide hair.
The other. I think two scenes that really stand out, both tracking shots.
Oh, right, yeah. So
the scene where the gangsters are introduced, and I didn't remember any of their names. But it's a good and yeah.
Frankie the Wop, come on. I mean, that's a memorable one, right? Jimmy Two Times.
I suppose I kind of sort of probably like half found it amusing that they have ridiculous names. But I genuinely, those sorts of names never stick in my head. So.
Oh.
Anyway. I don't have a great name, great head for names anyway. So.
Nicky Eyes. That's a great shot. But even more impressive than that is the one where Henry and Karen are going into the Copacabana.
Mm.
And they're just kind of going down this entrance, and all the way Henry's kind of bribing people to come in, and he is just saying hi to everyone, hi.
And that was the necessity was the mother of invention there, because he only did that because they weren't allowed to go through the front way.
Is that right?
So they were forced to take this mad back route, but it kind of looks like he knows everyone. It actually may add so much more to it.
Yeah, it's
because he's
shot.
Like saying hey, and everyone seems to know him, and they're shaking hands with everyone, and you know, giving them tips. And he ends up right at the very front of the club, and he gets his own table put there. It's, yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing, it's hugely long tracking shot. Yeah. Apparently they had to do it 8 times.
God.
Can you imagine? Yeah. You just get right to the end, and then apparently the comedian guy forgot his lines. Well, you imagine that? You get all the way to the end of the shot, and then that guy screws up. Oh God, we've got to do it all again. that comedian's great though. He opens his line, he's like, "Take my wife. No, seriously, take her."
Yeah, that's like, what do they call that? Vaudeville line.
Yeah, exactly.
But the speed of the film is quite unusual in the sense it changes, doesn't it? It starts off those tracking shots are all at the beginning of the film.
Mm.
Those kind of long, drawn out shots. There's not much cutting between characters to begin with. There's the camera focuses on people. And then as the film goes on and he becomes a little bit more flighty and
things start going,
drugs
yeah.
and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the speed of the cutting really increases.
Yeah, the film really gathers momentum as it goes on. You know, more and more people start dying. You know, the drug business starts kind of taking over and he gets more and more paranoid and frantic. You know,
yeah.
And it's technically amazing the way it kind of builds up to the point where... in 1980, and where Henry's racing around trying to make this drug deal, it's just cutting every few seconds.
Yeah, kind of like in the car journey where he thinks the helicopter's following him.
Yeah,
it's just almost constant. I don't think a shot lasts more than a couple of seconds
and
for about 2 minutes.
Exactly.
It's like, dun, 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 dun.
Exactly. And similarly, the music soundtrack changes constantly.
Mm.
There's a whereas before you'd have a long kind of tune playing out for the whole scene. This one, the track changes almost. Every few seconds.
And Scorsese made sure that music was only played from when it was actually, the scene was actually set.
Yeah,
so
that's right, yeah.
He wouldn't use music, you know, more modern music in older scenes and older music in more modern sequences.
Not like Plunkett and McLean.
No, that's true.
Bit of an odd reference there.
I think Scorsese said that himself.
He said that I don't want that, don't want it to be like Plunkett and McLean.
Which I think we're all very pleased about. That is an obscure reference. Well done. So, speaking of Plunkett and McLean and the kind of feeling of wanting to do terrible violence, the film is very violent, isn't
it's
it?
Very violent, yeah.
Very violent.
We were talking about comparing it to The Godfather earlier. And The Godfather is a violent film, nowhere near as violent as this.
No.
Specifically in the amount of blood you see.
Mm.
And just the. I mean, it opens with a really horrific scene where there's this guy almost dead in the boot and Joe Pesci just stabs him repeatedly.
And then Robin De Niro shoots him in the head like several times after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's just like, whoa.
I mean, it's that same guy when they attack this particular man. It's just the way they jump on him and just kicking him constantly.
Yeah, yeah. It's just really ugly violence.
Yeah, yeah.
Not glorified in any way. It's just really, really ugly.
Which I think is why I, again, keep going back to it, but I think it's why I enjoyed the film, despite its gangster trappings, despite the fact it is completely about gangsters, is it doesn't, you know, like, there are bits that look cool, but it also shows they're horrible, horrible people.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. They're quite willing to kill someone in cold blood, violently and horrifically.
Yeah, definitely. And you're pleased that Robert De Niro is arrested in the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One actual, speaking of that ending with Robert De Niro, I won't spoil the ending in case you haven't seen the film. But
he's a ghost.
He's a ghost. Has some fantastic glasses at the end, by the way. Kind of real Jim Bowen glasses. Yeah. They were a good feature. Yeah, that was definitely a plus point. But one thing, my slight disappointment with the film is it just ends quite suddenly.
Mm.
You know, it's been building and building and building and you expect there to be some sort of recriminations at the end, and it just kind of ends. Almost a little disappointing.
Well, it kind of ends when his gangster life ends, though, doesn't it?
It does, but I was kind of expecting the kind of main characters to have some sort of speech together or kind of some sort of, I don't know, coda to that 30-year relationship.
But I suppose it is based on a real story, so that just... That didn't happen. That wouldn't happen in real life, would it? Yeah, like he's terrified he's going to get shot. He wouldn't then meet the guy and have a chat with him and say, "I'm about to dob you in."
Yeah, I suppose that's the trouble with true life stories.
Yeah, there's no clear dramatic arc, and then there's a nice resolution at the end. Well, would you recommend it?
Definitely.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen this film, just go and see it. Okay. Simple as that.
Yes. I really would recommend it as well. For those who love gangsters, for those of you who don't like gangsters either.
Yeah, like Ian.
Yeah, like me. Right, before we round things up, our secret sponsor.
Yeah, our secret sponsor this week is Owl's Movie Review.
Yeah, at the Owl Brown Show. His website is www.moviereviewworld.com.
Yeah.
It's a great little review site. We are, one day we're going to find we're going to pick a secret sponsor who isn't a direct competitor to us.
Yeah, it makes it, maybe we'll just pick someone who's just a person.
Yeah. Or, you know, just, we were going to pick Yorkshire News, but we didn't feel it was local enough.
It wasn't local enough. Yeah, the Yorkshire News, if you're listening, your news wasn't about Yorkshire.
That annoyed us. We wanted some real local tidbits. Yeah. There's just none there.
No.
So, sorry, Yorkshire News. You are not this week's secret sponsor. But Al, you are.
So that's it. If you've got any films you'd like us to watch, please write to us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter on 101 Films or like our Facebook page and leave a comment for us there at 101 Films.
And you can check out our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com.
Excellent. So next week, Lewis, let's not do a gangster film.
Okay.
We'll do something... Let's do something nice. Something charming.
Okay.
Something friendly, nice for the kids. All
right.
For all our kiddie listeners out there.
Aww.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, well done. No more beer. Half a beer, that's all it took.